So you're all set, ready? I didn't quite have time to finish talking about Gandhi's ideas on sensory motor development. Yesterday we ran out of time, unfortunately. Oh, some thank you, I see. I've sent an email off, I've never replied, so I'm sort of hoping that by the end of the year, maybe the decade, we'll get this part fixed and we can keep in touch. I'm talking about three main characteristics of infancy that Gandhi described. He believes there are three main features of infant cognition. The argument that babies have no innate knowledge, we talked about what he meant by that. He argued that babies are egocentric in their view of the physical world. They believe that the physical world depends upon their own activity, their own perception, their own actions. They're egocentric, and obviously that view has to give way, it's incorrect. And finally, he argued that infants don't use mental representations. They can't create mental symbols. They don't have the symbolic function. That marks the onset of the next stage of development. And he had several pieces of evidence that he offered to support this claim. And this was his view, as I mentioned yesterday, that for the young infant, the object is a mere image that re-enters the void as soon as it vanishes and emerges from it for no objective reason. So babies come from mental symbols, they don't have this permanent object concept. That is one of the key products of infancy. So yesterday, the PhD offered, this was 6 months old in our lab, and what I've done is hit the toy from it. So he's sitting here, looking at the toy, it's just been hidden under this cup. He's very interested in it. He's motivated. He wants to get it back. Look what he does. He picks the cup up and goes straight into his mouth. Okay? But where's he looking? Does that look as though he remembered the toy was there and was trying to find it again? It clearly doesn't. That's characteristic of six-month-olds. They'll grab it, they can see, they don't show any indications of remembering the existence of the toy underneath the cup. A moment later, he looks down and sees it, and then he grabs it. So it's not a motor skill problem. He's very skillful with his hands. He can pick up a cup, he can pick up a toy. But it seems to be a mental problem. He can't recall the existence of the toy when it's gone out of sight. And for Piaget, that was one of the strong pieces of evidence that young infants lack a permanent object concept. They don't have this concept of permanence. We see similar problems persisting up until 12 months of age. Yesterday I talked about egocentric behavior, the A not B search error, and again that's some of the actual evidence that babies, 9, 10 months, don't recall the existence of objects. They try and recreate objects by repeating the same actions. So they don't remember that they didn't exist. So here's an example. God, this was about 100 years ago, so this was the last century. This was a little clip from a series of the making of the BT2. And what we've got here is a 12-month-old baby, which is at the end of the series, and I'm going to hide a toy invisibly. Okay, let me just show you what I mean by that. I've got a cloth on one side of the table with a green cloth, and I've got a toy in it, and I'm going to hide under a cup. Okay, baby can see it going under a cup. Then I slide the cup over to where the bomb is, secretly leave the toy behind, and slide the cup back to its original position. Okay? Now, the baby reasonably will search first in the cup, and she'll find it's empty. Okay? Now, if you did that, what would you do? You'd figure, I played a trick. You can remember the existence of the toy. You know that the client is moved. And I left it behind here, you'll go there and come up, second and find it. Let's see what she does. Going to look at here. We get the toy back. That's always the hardest bit. Cup. Now I'm sliding, just watching the whole thing. Back it goes. Camera zooming in nicely. She searches, goes straight to where she last saw the toy, and that was it. Okay? She didn't go to the cover at all. She had no idea where the toy came from. Piaget's explanation was lacked a symbolic representation given to it. She couldn't make this inference about where it had gone. And so she just searched at the place where she last saw it. It's a sensory motor search, not a search directed, driven by a symbolic representation.
Yeah. Was she searching?
Yes,
so all that was in front of her was a cup and a cloth, and the cloth was pretty boring and the cup was pretty interesting.
She saw the toy. She saw the toy going, the question was, what she really searching? Yeah. She was searching. She was looking for the toy. She was quite happy that she didn't find it. They just behaved like that. Yes, she was certainly looking. And you can run these tests, and occasionally you get an interesting reaction. The kids will look in there and they'll look at you. And sometimes they'll shout, but you get an emotional reaction. Yeah, she was searching. The toy had been there, she'd gone. And in fact, we'd been fooling around like that previously. So she had searched a moment before.
What happens if the cover over both the non-toy and the toy are the same?
If they're the same, can I ask that afterwards?
Okay.
Because I've got a few things to get to move on to. It's a good question. What if the covers do look the same? Often it's a little more confusing. You tend to get more errors. And a real tricky task is when you switch covers. You write the toy on the one, and you switch two covers that are identical. That's a tricky task, even for 3 or 4-year-olds. They often make errors, so there are problems here. But the only argument here is that it's a lack of mental representation. If you play these games with older babies, as he did with 18-month-olds, then you get a different reaction. They go to first base, and then go to second place. And in fact, they've searched a whole sequence of places. They can remember the places you visited and remember the existence of the toy. So Gaffney is arguing that there's an interesting change taking place around 18 months, and it's the onset of symbolic representation. Here's another piece of evidence. This is one of these lovely little observations that Gaffney throws into his books, and his interpretation is absolutely spot on. This is rock-hard evidence that a child, a toddler, has a capacity for mental representation. This involved one of his daughters, I think it was Jacqueline, she was 18 months old, and they had a cousin visiting. He was 3 years old, and he threw a tantrum, as little three-year-old boys want to do. So, he didn't want to go home, he threw himself on the floor, screamed, kicked, shouted, made a real spectacle of himself. And Jacqueline stood there, open-mouthed, watching it, because she'd never seen anything like this before. This was the very first time she'd ever seen such a spectacle. So the little guy was calmed down, sent back home, Jacqueline went to bed. Next morning, he actually hears this noise, this racket, coming from her room. And he sits his head around the door, and there is his daughter, lying on the floor, shouting, screaming, waving her arms, kicking her legs, throwing a tantrum. But it's not a real tantrum, it's a pretend tantrum. She's remembered what she saw the day before, and she's copying her cousin, because when she looks up and sees the Piaget, sees her dad looking around the corner, she grins at him, she stops. And Piaget realized that he was astute enough to recognize that this was a key moment in her development. She was moving from the sensory motor period to the operational period, because she must have had a representation of her cousin's behavior. And it wasn't just sitting there in memory. She could retrieve it, she could recall what had happened, and she could use that representation to guide her own behavior. This is imitation, and it's delayed imitation. She wasn't simply producing behavior that was already in her repertoire, because this was new. She hadn't done this before. She actually knew this. We have detailed information about that this kid. So, the ability to recall information from the past and copy things, to imitate something that is novel, is very strong evidence for a capacity to use mental representations. And this was a very, very clear example. And this has been studied. It's a tricky thing to study, but it's been studied quite closely in recent years. The more evidence in later dimensions. So Piaget is arguing that there is a change taking place at the end of infancy. Babies acquire this capacity for symbolic representation, and there are a number of key criteria for see that happening. Be of a search for objects after they've been hidden invisibly. Be able to make an inference about where the hidden object has gone and where it is now. Delayed imitation, just see that example. Be able to solve problems, not by trial and error, that's a sensory motor solution, but ahead of time, by thinking of the solution, by planning it. And Piaget observed several examples of that. We'll again look at that in later lectures next week. Engaging in pretend play, I mentioned that yesterday, that's very good evidence for the ability to use both the symbols. Quite equal, films of language, which is occurring at the same time. All of these things appear in Piaget's hint at around the same time, around 1858-1859, that's what we're hearing. And so that, Piaget, marks a change in development, the entrance to a new stage. So, this is a summary of what Piaget is saying. They have no knowledge, they're born knowing nothing at all about the physical world. Their cognition is based on action. And by action, Piaget also means perception. Sensory motor. Sorry, I shut you off to a rowdy bunch. It's only psychology. For Piaget, they live in this here and now world. They have no permanent object concept, no capacity to remember representation. Yes, they can recognize things. Don't run away with the idea he's saying they don't have memory. Of course they do. How could they learn otherwise? They have a memory, they can recognize, but that's sensory motor. What they can't do is retrieve information in memory to recall it and use it to plan ahead, to solve a problem, or to copy something that they saw a while ago. So, yes, they have memory, but they don't have the ability to use mental symbols. They can't recall things. And they've got no processes for thinking and reasoning. They may solve problems, yeah, but quite far enough. They can't reason. They can't make inferences. All of these abilities appear in the next stage of development. So that concludes the session. Now we're going to move on to a different topic. Now I'm going to start looking at more recent work, and particularly some of the research methods that have been developed. Since Piaget mainly is describing information, that is the word available to Piaget. And what we should do to start with is to look at the important topic of infants' research, the ability of infants to process visual information. So we're going to look at a little bit of perception, some attention, and also memory and learning. And what we're going to cover here are some of the early studies of infant visual development, some of the pioneering studies where researchers were developing very new methods for answering basic questions about infant perception, what can they see, what sense can they make out of the visual world around them, what can they remember. And in fact, those techniques are now widely used today. They have been improved. I'll talk about some of the improvements. We're going to look at some more recent work on newborns and young infants, now particularly tomorrow, sorry, not tomorrow, next Monday, Monday's lecture. And I'm going to talk about what is known as the phenomenon of habituation, and how we can examine that process and learn a good deal both about perception, memory, and also differences between babies. Different individual differences that can relate to differences that emerge later in childhood. We'll look at some of the theories about how those differences produce variation, particularly in childhood IQ. So that's going to be the topic for today and Monday. So what are you going to find out about today? I'm going to talk about three methods of studying visual perception in nothing. One is the preferential looking method. Okay, I'll explain what that involves. Another involves recording visual scanning eye movements in infants to see what attracts their attention. And the third is looking and examining the phenomenon of infant habituation, which can tell us a good deal about how information, visual information, gets processed by babies. And in particular, I'll talk about a special technique which is known as infant control procedure, which is the technique that is widely used today. So that's what we're going to look at. It's very effective. And the whole chart, here's a horrible thing for you, okay? What I've done is posted an essay topic. As you know, the first piece of coursework is an essay that you're going to do on the first part of my lectures. This is the topic, stuff for research methods that we use to investigate the extension of distance. So today, lecture, Monday's lecture, are going to be very relevant to that topic. The word is 1,000 words, deadline is Thursday, 9th of October, and we're going to have a feedback meeting on Monday, 3rd of November, where I'll give you a lot of information about where you go right, and maybe where you went wrong, how you can organise information about how you should approach writing this essay. So short, okay, it's about three pages, 3.5 pages, no more than that. Don't write any more than 1,000 words. If you're doing more than 1,000 words, you're doing too much. Okay? So that's why we've got the word of it. It's just going to be a short summary. Much more information on my FD. You can look at the references. You can go to my area, my folder in my FD, download a chapter written by one of the leading researchers in visual perception and Slater. If you want to read more about this topic, see more information there. And if you have any queries, questions, you can either ask me on class or send me an email. My email address is on the notice. Okay, so that's the essay topic. Let's take a look at the individual perception. It's not that long ago, we still dig out textbooks from 40 years ago, where people were claiming newborn babies don't really have any vision. They can't make any sense at all of the visual world. And this kind of picture is interesting because for a lot of people, you may be having exactly the experience that a lot believe young infants may have. It's a disorganized mess on a jumble of black and white shapes. Can anybody see anything in there? Don't tell me what it is. Can anybody see anything? It makes sense to you. For others, is it just black and white shapes, meaningless? Yeah, good, okay. Anybody get it? Yeah, it's something. It doesn't mean anything, right? Don't worry. These aren't technically organized. Anybody else? Yeah? Yeah. If you've seen it before, you've probably had that experience of thinking, oh, what on earth is that? A lot of people report seeing a face, okay? A bearded face. In fact, if I ask some of you who can see it, male or female? Male, okay? Young or old? Roughly what age? Teenager, 20s, something like that, yeah? Has he shaved his beard or not? No, okay. Does that make any sense to people who can't see this? You can see it now. Ah, you've had an aha experience. Okay, let's just try and make it. Don't help you? No? Okay. Try that. Yeah, it is a very test to... okay, well, let's move on. We can't move on. But you can puzzle over there. You can download it. But you see the problem. Sorry, let me just go back. Newborns, they can just be born. Okay? Right, delivery room, you know, the nurses, the midwife, there's mum, there's a tired dad, everybody standing around, all the equipment and so on. Is that experience, when you baby first opens its eyes, confusing, a jumble of mission, actually, or does it make sense? Is there some meaning there? So, you know, are babies having the experience that there's several moves reporting, or are they actually able to make sense when they see the figures? You see the outlines. It's a basic question. And for many years, we didn't know how to answer it. Well, certainly, we know that babies do have vision at birth. And I'll provide some of the evidence later today and also next month. But we do know there are also improvements. Here's one of them. Here's a radical change. Visual acuity improves dramatically during the first 4 to 6 months of life. It actually continues to develop. It's up to about adult-like levels by 12 months, but it still continues to develop in the next 2 or 3 years. But most of it has been accomplished during the first year. But the newborn baby experience is rather like this. Slater, and so the face, that's about 20 centimeters away from about 40 centimetres away from the baby. That is the level of blurring that the newborn is going to see. Okay, so you get some information, but it's not very sharp. 4 months later, it's getting pretty good. So there are rapid changes in visual development. That's the case. The question we want to answer is, even given these limitations, what sense can babies make of visual information? Well, here's one very simple method. Suppose we want to ask the question, can babies see as compared, say, to a grey blank background? Well, you notice it's there. And it's differences. We can use what's known as the preferential looking method. And this is a slide shows how you do it. Baby here, stolen baby, which is probably over 6 months old, sitting on mum's lap, looking at a pair of faces. One's up black, one's on its side. Can the baby tell the difference? Same place, same colour, same, you know, brightness, but the orientation is different. Can you see the difference? Right in the here is the peephole, and through the peephole is the observer recording how long the baby spent looking at each of these two faces for a fixed period of time, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, whatever. You record that with a, if you have a mouse, you know, a computer, laptop, or to keep a tally of the total amount of time. And the conclusion is, if you find babies look significantly longer at one stimulus compared to another, then at least you can conclude that they can see a difference. If what the difference is, well, we need to do more research to find out. But that, the fact that you get a difference, is evidence that they're detecting something. And should be another. Should be another slide at the top here. But, we could ask basic questions here. There's another picture here of a grey box and a black triangle. Okay? What do we care about these two things? If you find babies reliably significantly longer at the triangle compared to the plain grey, then that's evidence that they're detecting something. That the vision is picking up some contour. We can also use this comparison technique to measure baby security. We can show that it improves in the first 4 months or so. If we compare stripes, black and white stripes, with a plain grey, okay, if the baby looks longer at the stripes compared to the grey, then obviously they're detecting the stimulus. If you then make these stripes narrower, and you get to the limits of their acuity, they look blurred, and they look grey, and you find babies look equally at the two stimuli. So by varying the width of the stripes, you can use this preferential looking technique to measure the ability of babies to detect finer detail. And in fact, this is a standard test of visual acuity development on using it in many of our studies, particularly in omega-3 fats, because omega-3 fats, especially DHA, enhance the development of visual acuity. Talk more about that next week. Also here, we can start to ask interesting questions about what babies know about familiar stimuli and faces. Here we've got two faces. I don't know which one you're looking at. It's the one with scrambles, with horror version. On a low level, this is just giving a perception. Same amount of colour, same amount of contour, same features. But one is regular face and one is scrambled. There have been a number of interesting studies looking at when babies show more interest in the scrambled face compared to the regular one. That would indicate that they have learned something about the arrangement of features in the normal face. And finally, the scrambled version is more interesting than the regular version. So, again, preferential looking methods, very simple. Baby just sits there, doesn't have to do anything other than look. So a very nice technique for exploring perception in young infants. And we can answer at least three basic questions. Oh, there it is. I don't know how to do that. Well, good God. Oh, yeah. It's there. Okay, the pioneering research in America was Bob Fass. And what happened was Ian Gerber, the first developed this method for studying susceptibility. Up until practically time, we really had no idea about what infants could see. In fact, developed this very simple visual preparation looking technique. And one of the first studies show that young infants certainly can detect stimuli because they will look longer, as you can see from these looking times here, at patterns compared to plain stimuli, to plain white, gray, not really interesting. Black bars are a number, I think these are babies older than 2 months, gray bars younger than 2 months, same pattern themselves, and you can see the basically it's been looking at most of all in this schematic phase. Sorry, the stimulus we're looking at most of all is this schematic phase, even with the young infants, which suggests that babies either are learning about faces very rapidly or maybe know something about the arrangement of features in the face. And I'm trying to look at them when they're bald. Yeah, we'll look at that, some research on that next morning. But also look at infants' ability to detect different patterns, to notice differences. And these are some of the patterns that we use in this very early study. They're made up of little black and white squares. What varies is the arrangement of the squares. So here we've got concentric circles here, sort of a diamond grid, here a sort of jiggle round, and here a regular grid. So, on a low level, these stimuli are all the same. Same brightness, same amount of contour, same shapes, okay, same area. So if babies can see differences, it's got to be based on the arrangement of the components, not these low-level features. It's got to be to do with their structure. And that's what Max was interested in. When can babies begin to notice the form, the arrangement of stimuli? And what we show here is the amount of time spent looking at each of these stimuli at different ages. So we've got newborns here, 1, 2, 3, 4. And what you see is up until about 2 months, no significant differences. Babies certainly detect these stimuli. They look at them, but they don't show any preferences for one over the other. And then we get interesting changes. So after 2 months, it's this one, D, this regular shape, which is least interesting, and these others, which recruit most attention. So around 2.5 months, it's what is A and B, it's these two, which infants are looking at most of all. Now, we have a reason for those differences. The point Fans wanted to make was, with this very simple technique, just measuring how long infants spend looking, you can demonstrate changes, what he thought were changes in the ability to process higher level information about shapes, in this case the arrangement of the squares. Now notice the change occurred around 2 months, and Fanny thought that was interesting because he discovered one or two other changes that appeared to occur at around 2 months. This is our work, however, we can look at that, this is our work by two Americans, Phil Sarpatic and Bill Kessler. And they tackle the problem head-on, what babies see, when they have a functioning visual system at birth. They measure their eye movements, they record eye movements. And what they do is show the infants a simple shimmick shape here, a triangle. What they do is to put little marker lights, infrared marker lights, at the vertex on each of the vertices on the triangle. And they have an infrared camera which was recording the movement and the image of these reflected dots from the baby's eye. So it's reflected in the baby's cornea, and you go closely on the infant, and as the baby scans around the figure, you see the marker dots moving relative to the pupil, and from that, you can figure out exactly where the baby is looking. And here, you can see a very early eye tracker data, evidence that this baby has focused on this corner here, and most of the fixations are localized. So this kid picked out a single feature, very little scanning around, but certainly evidence that this baby has detected the contour. And typically what you see is before the stimulus appears, the baby's eye is moving around on the plain background, then you project the stimulus, and then they hold it and start to examine it. Here, we see something happening. This typical non-baby, this is a newborn, grown baby, more extensive scanning, focusing or picking up the contour, picking up on the important details. The newborns don't show a lot of scanning. Older babies, from around 2 months onwards, show this more extended scanning. And they also presented greater. They showed other interesting stimuli, such as faces. And they get the typical kind of scanning pattern that would emerge in around 1 month. See what the baby's doing? Picking up on just a limited area of the face, and it's the outside of the face. Okay? Now remember that blurry image, which is typical of the newborn. 1 month old is better, but not a lot better. So the most striking part of the stimulus would be the boundary, the edge of the top of the head compared to the background, and that's what's attracting attention. By 2 months, however, you typically get scans of the heads. Now is a big shift. Now the baby is avoiding these outside edges and is going for the interesting features that give much more information about the face, who it is, and what their emotional state might be. Are they happy, sad? And it's no surprise, in fact, that the parents recently report that it's at around 2 months, 6 weeks, 2 months, that babies make eye-to-eye contact and begin to look at their faces. And a lot of moms report that, you know, it's at that moment that they feel they really are dealing with a person. The first 6 weeks, it's just misery because you've got this messy, smelly, hungry, noisy, difficult intruder who wakes you up all hours of the night. Suddenly, at 6 months, the baby starts to look you in the eyes, and you begin to think that there's no communication taking place. And this work by Salopatic and Pessy suggested that this change has to do with the control processes that are organizing eye movement, which you see taking place. So look at some of the different changes taking place. We've got good evidence that babies can detect patterns. Okay? This work of France, work of Salopatic and Pessy, and newborns are doing this. But are they making sense? And can they remember anything about what they've seen? Well, FACTS developed the first technique for demonstrating visual recognition memory in the animals. And he argued that if you repeat the stimulus to the baby, if that's evidence of memory, learning memory recognition, what you should find is the amount of time the baby spends looking should decrease. Okay? Something new is interesting, should attract attention, but with repetition, provided the baby is processing the information and remembering it, you should find that that attention should decrease because it's no longer new, it's getting very familiar. And that process, which is well understood in animals, is known as habituation. And habituation involves information processing, identifying features, coding, and storing information in memory. In fact, was able to demonstrate for the very first time that young infants produce this habituation, and therefore, even though they had visual benefits to memory rapidly. And he found this in babies aged 2 months, or longer. These are the first data that were ever published on infant habituation. And what Fats has done is he's taken a couple of stimuli, two pictures, put them side by side. These were magazine pictures, very crude kind of study. And he shows them for a minute. Each trial lasts a minute. Halfway through the trial, the two pictures are switched around to control for any position preference that the baby might have. So here's the first trial, here's the second trial, third, fourth. One of the pictures is changed, it's always changing, okay? But the other one you always get the same. And what Max is interested in is the change in preference for looking at these two faces, these two stimuli. If the baby is able to process information and recognize the familiar one, we should see less and less looking at the repeated stimulus and proportionately more and more looking at the novel one. And these are the data he's got. These are different age groups. It's 1 to 2 months, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, 4 to 5, 6. And what you can see with the older babies, 2 months and older, is on the initial trial, equal looking at the two pictures. It's around 50%. But with the repetition, with repeated trials, the percentage of time spent looking at the repeated picture decreases. It falls significantly below 50%. And that is habituation. And that's very good evidence that the kids are learning about features, recognizing stimuli, and are remembering. Notice, however, no change whatsoever in the babies younger than 2 months. They start out with fluctuation, but they start out around 50%, and no change at all. They don't show any evidence of recognizing the stimulus, even after, what is it, 10 minutes exposure. Actually, it's a very long time for a young baby. Faculty tend to keep awake that long. It's pretty impressive. So very striking results there. The first illustration of habituation is recognition memory. And since then, there have been literally thousands of studies using these sorts of techniques. This is the typical kind of result you just get. You show stimulus for a fixed period of time for a repeated trials, shorter periods than fancy periods. So, say, geometric shape, right? Something interesting. You get longer periods, the longest took in the rainbow's trial, and then gradually it decreases, and then it levels off. And what we think is happening is we're getting a reaction to novelty, interest in something new. As looking time decreases over these trials, what's happening is the baby is encoding information, storing in memory, comparing the stimulus with what it's already learned, noticing there are still a few things to that haven't been processed, it's carrying on with that encoding. And then finally, there's nothing new to learn, and recognition is taking place. So that's the reaction to novelty, but encoding, and finally, recognition. And it's a very straightforward procedure, very easy to administer. Now, perhaps, as I've mentioned, notice changes taking place at around 2 months. Okay? The ability to distinguish between different forms. Now, he couldn't get any of this during younger than 2 months. The onset of recognition memory, that occurred at around 2 months. Subpathic and testing work reporting changes in eye movements and scanning patterns around 2 months. What Fats argued was that the common denominator, the common explanation for all of these changes could be that at birth babies have a functioning but primitive visual system. It's a visual system that can detect the presence of stimuli, it notices contour, so the infants will scan around and notice something and look at it, certainly it responds to movement, but doesn't process any information about form or features. The reason for that was thought that the visual cortex wasn't functioning at birth. And instead, it starts to function at around 2 months of age. This was the early explanation in the 60s and 70s for all of these changes to the stimulus. So, the babies are born with a visual system, but a very primitive visual system, the more sophisticated cortical system which can process orientation, shape, colour, features, and is involved in memory, doesn't really get going until about 2 months. And that would explain the changes that have been observed. It's a very interesting hypothesis. It turns out it's wrong. It's completely wrong. Babies have a functioning visual cortex from birth. There are changes such as acuity. There are changes in control of attention as the brain systems develop. But you can demonstrate with more sensitive techniques that babies have visual memory, and you can tell the differences between different forms, different patterns, within 2 or 3 days after they've been born. And one of the problems is that these early techniques were rather insensitive. One technique for studying habituation was to present it as a stimulus for a fixed period of time in each child. So how long should that be? Well, for Francis, a minute. For other researchers, maybe 20 seconds, maybe 30, and how do you know what is the right length of time? One of the problems is we now know that babies have different characteristics. Some of them process information much faster than others. So if you have, say, 30 seconds for each trial, your fast, quick babies are going to get bored very quickly, because they're going to process everything, learn about the stimulus, but you keep showing them the same old thing. And in fact, a lot of the early studies ended up with what's delicately known as subject loss. That means, you know, about 80% of the kids were screaming and crying because they were so fed up with the procedure. So using fixed-length trials is very insensitive. Of course, it may be appropriate if you have a long trial length, if you've got a baby that's very slow at processing information, that's not a bad idea. But if you have a short trial length, of course, you may not give these kids, the slow kids, long enough to process all the information. It's not a very sophisticated, successful method. So what we need is something more sensitive. And this new method was developed in the 1970s by Francis Horowitz, and it's called infant control procedure, and this is the method that's used for all studies now. And the idea is that rather than experiment deciding how long the baby gets to see the stimulus, the baby decides how long she gets to see the stimulus. The infant control is great in each trial. So what you do is you put your stimulus up on the screen, infant looks, record the amount of looking, and the trial ends when the baby looks away. Well, the first study said 2 seconds. If the look away is 2 seconds or longer, that's the end of the trial. That's the baby signaling that she's had enough. So typically what infants do is they look, and they look away a little bit, and they look back, and then they give a long look away, and that's telling you that the trial's ended. They want to break it. So we can fix the duration of each trial, and put it, or rather, we can let the baby fix the duration, the baby can control it. And then we can carry on presenting the stimulus, okay? But obviously you've got to stop, you've got to figure out when the stimulus has habituated. And the way to do that is to measure the looking time, and when it falls to a certain level, a criterion level, then you say that's when you've habituated. And typically, it's calculated in this way. You measure the average length of the first 2 trials, okay? And then for each successive pair of trials, you calculate the length, the duration, and when that average of the successive trials falls to 50% or less of the first 2, then you say the baby's habituated. Okay? Let me give you a bit of an illustration to how that works. Right, this is an infant who habituates, I have my own child, and that's a total of the time of 28 seconds. So here's our baseline. First 2 trials, take the average, the computer does this all for you, 9.4 seconds. And then looking continuous and continuous, although I've habituated 4 trials. Those last 2 trials, the average looking time is down to 4.4 seconds. It's less than 50% of the original, initial, baseline level of that baby's habituated. Okay? And the whole process is under control of this baby. Now this is a pretty quick one, 28 seconds here. Here's another one who takes more than twice as long. Okay? So I'm down to baseline of 10.2. And then it's falling, but isn't reaching that 50% criteria. Oh, look at that, 51%. The computer says, no, you're going to have to look at the stimulus again, and finally habituates 34% of the original baseline. This, a longer period, and it took more than twice as long to reach the same criteria. So, we've got a fast processor. The previous example was just processing input here, but the technique is nicely adjusted to accommodate these differences in babies, and it's been a very, very successful technique, studying perception. One final comment. Once the baby has reached that criteria, how do you know it's genuine habituation? Because what we want to claim is that the baby's processing information. Okay? They've learned about it, the stimulus, they're recognizing it. But there could be lots of reasons why infants' attention decreases, why they're apparently habituated. It could be change of state, maybe they're getting sleepy. And so that would easily explain why the looking time is dropping off. Nothing to do with processing, it just needs time. It could be that they're fed up with the whole procedure. They're not sleepy, but they're not processing information. They're just trying to find something else that's more interesting. They want to get out and sleep. It could be that. Or it could be just a short sequence of short looks. Okay? Just a random sequence, and they really haven't processed all the information. It's still got more learning. But we ended the procedure too soon. It could be that. So what we need is a test to demonstrate that they can recognize the familiarized stimulus. And we need to do that with lots of other sort of recovery. A looking time test or a preference test once we've habituated. This is the way you do it. It's the stimulus, the baby who's reached criterion. At that point, we then show them a pair of stimuli. The one that they've been habituated to, the one that's novel. Okay? If this is genuine habituation, you would expect significantly longer looking at the novel compared to the familiar stimulus. That's the baby who's fallen asleep, the one who just wants to get out of the chair, then you'll get people looking. They won't show any evidence of recognizing the familiar. That's the final test to demonstrate that you've got genuine habituation. Very easy technique, isn't it? An infant in our lap, sitting on mum's lap, and we're rear projecting his face here, and in this little hole is an observer, crouching down, watching. The baby's eye movements and just pushing a button, recording how long he's looking at the stimulus. Here's a little video clip. Again, this is a BBC film. And you can see the infant there, sitting on mum's lap, looking at the stimulus, research around the back. And that's the view through the peephole. Of course, it's like it's the camera, watch. It's happy, you know, of course. But there you see, look at this single stimulus, okay, that's the familiarization. Infant control procedure, the trial ends, the baby looks away. Now we get a preference test, okay? And you see what happens, okay? He's comparing the two. He's looking at them from one to the other. The observer recording the times, and the computer will tell you that he's looking significantly longer at the normal stimulus. That, of course, is the ideal approach on these studies, where you get really good reflections from the baby's eyes. But, of course, they don't look something like that. So, let's summarize. The early work showed that newborn infants, young infants, definitely can detect visual stimuli. But there was no evidence that they could see different forms or recognize stimuli. No evidence of memory at all. It's taken a long time to get that evidence. The original interpretation was that this could be due to the late onset of cortical function. The visual cortex didn't develop until about 2 months, and you need a visual cortex if you're going to process detailed information about features and forms, and also remember what you've seen. That would be a very simple explanation. But it now turns out that these early techniques were too sensitive, and were just masking the abilities that are present in younger infants who need more sensitive, baby-friendly techniques to allow the children abilities. Infant habituation is one of these techniques. It involves information processing and memory, and infant control procedure is the third method that allows the baby to dictate how long the whole procedure is going to last. And when you use that technique, you can get very good evidence that even newborn infants have visual memory and can process quite sophisticated information. And we'll look at that in the lecture next time.